Welcome to the Shaping Portsmouth podcast. Shaping Portsmouth is a collaboration of key Portsmouth businesses, transforming Portsmouth together.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Shaping Portsmouth podcast. I am here with Chris West. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
I'm really excited to chat to you today. This episode is a spotlight, really, on burnout. May is a month where we are sharing a little bit about burnout, what it means, what it is, maybe some ways that we can help people if they think they might be experiencing it. So it's great to talk to you and to be able to share some of this wisdom that you have on this topic. But before we dive into that, tell us a little bit about what you do, Chris, in the city, what you're up to. And you've got a role at Shaping, actually. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I'm proud of the role with Shaping. And it's at an infancy that we really want to and need to, because it's a morally the right thing to do. And that's about leading the mental health and well-being agenda. Mm-hmm. We hear so much about people saying that they should be doing it, and there's so many people in the city doing great things, but this shouldn't be a bolt-on. Mm-hmm. We should try and make this the way of life and how we operate.
A culture.
Absolutely. Yeah. You constantly hear organisations talk about the biggest asset being the people, mm-hmm. and it's about how we integrate everything to do with the people. Into that, because if we want people to truly bring their whole self to work, bringing the good, the bad, the ugly, them whole selves to work is what we really need to do, whilst giving people the support to be able to deal with that.
Yeah, you're right. We're all humans at the end of the day, aren't we? And we're doing our best to get through life, and we're at work a lot. So you can't switch that some of those parts off, can you? And then rock up to work and then sort of carry on. So it's the workplace health and wellbeing lead, aren't you? That's your role.
Myself and Sahela. So it's hugely proud, honoured to be doing it.
Amazing. And what other things do you get up to, Chris?
So my career has been sort of away from mental health and well-being for much of a part of it, and it was within the commercial world, working in the food and drink industry, but largely, well, worked for some huge brands with some great values. So Cadbury's, it's funny because whenever you say Cadbury's to people, it puts a big smile on their face, and the emotions that chocolate can bring to a lot of people, and then some other big brands in the food and drink industry. But my passion was always about developing my teams to help them achieve where they wanted to get through. So that's through the coaching and support that I did for them. And some of my proudest moments of when people that have come into the business that I've mentored, they've then worked for me, have then gone on to be my boss.
Wow. Must feel like a really kind of satisfying moment.
Yeah. And do you know what? It's lovely that you say that, because for a lot of people, they question it. Are you happy with that? But I got to a stage where I was content.
Okay.
And actually, working in huge organisations, that can be a bit of a problem, because you can be seen as a blocker in roles. Mm-hmm. But actually, developing people to move through was enabling the organisation to reap the rewards in different ways.
I think it says a lot. And perhaps quite like an egoless place to be, to like coach someone to almost like supersede you.
Yeah. And we're all on different paths.
Yes.
And we're all going, running, walking, crawling, whatever it is, at different paces. So, it's fascinating and humbling to
and
be part of that.
And did you find, like, it's funny, we spoke about contentment when Sahela was on the podcast, and I think we're always striving, aren't we, to kind of like be more, do more, you know, climb the ladder, get higher. And I don't think ambition is wrong by any sense. Like, I'm an ambitious person myself, but sometimes I think we forget that contentment also is the goal. And did you reach a level where you just naturally felt content with where you were and what you were doing?
Yeah, because I've always been people focused.
Yeah, okay.
And a phrase that I often use is that we're constantly judging our backstory with other people's highlight reels. And you never hear somebody or put on a social media post of, I forgot the milk, had to go back to the shops today. It's always the smug pictures of legs and a swimming pool in the background of people living their best life. Mm-hmm. But it's not always reality.
No.
And so to find that contentment was important for me.
Yeah.
Hey, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend I'm holier than now, because I get it wrong, as we all do. We're all human mm-hmm. at times. But to have that bit of knowledge, understanding, and spending that time to work out my own core values.
Yes.
Integrity, accountability, and empathy are mine, for anyone that's interested.
I love that.
But having worked that out and figured that out, it enabled me to have that platform to be able to move forwards, and also understanding the people that I enjoy working with, the people that I could struggle to work with and to need to adapt my approach, mm-hmm. have the conversation with people. It's part of the fun of being human. We're all yes. different.
And how did that evolve into your work with kind of mental health and well-being?
So personal part for me, in April of 2020, a colleague, or two work colleagues, sadly died from COVID.
Okay.
And the following year, I was turning 40, and it suddenly became a, also had two knee operations that year.
Okay.
So there was a lot going on that yeah. wasn't what you'd class as connected to work. But everything is so intrinsically linked. So for me, it became what's important? What do I really want to do? What matters to me?
Life is short. Health is so important. And
absolutely. And I saw how different people with the two work colleagues, I saw how different people reacted to that. Some very different from me, some similar to myself. And again, that's what makes us human, and we work, process, take action at different times.
Yeah.
And so that really triggered something in me of probably doubling down mm-hmm. on the people
yeah.
element rather than the sort of corporate sales. And so that then triggered me to become a grief recovery specialist. I did the work around mental health first aid, recently done work within the training team at Solent Mind, who do so much in the local area to help and support people. And then I also run some workshops myself, because if we want people to bring their whole selves to work, we have to equip people at work with the skills if somebody does come and open up, because it's one, it's a privilege if somebody will come and open up, because
and if they feel safe enough to talk to you, that is a huge privilege. You're so right.
But I couldn't agree more. Mm. But with that can come to you taking on a lot, and only a very small percentage of people in the world are trained counsellors. And so to be able to give that advice, well, most importantly in the workplace, know how to support and then direct to the right and relevant support mm-hmm. is vital. But obviously we'd like to, for organisations, and there's so many people and groups across this city that are doing phenomenal stuff to support businesses. And this is about shining the light on those guys, raising awareness so that as a city, our companies, organisations here, people know that Portsmouth takes this seriously.
And that's why I think the work that you'll be leading with the workplace health and wellbeing is so important. We have so many brilliant businesses, and the amount of employees, across the city that they're there to support. It's really exciting that the program hopefully will evolve over these next months and we can have our own kind of bank of resources or tools or however it looks to offer businesses.
It's big, because it's ultimately something that we kind of don't want to be a thing because it would intrinsically be done by organisations.
Yeah.
However, we're not there. Nowhere is there at the moment. Nowhere in the world is there at the moment. And so the more that we can shine a spotlight, enable people to have the confidence to be able to speak up when it does matter, because we know that there is still a huge stigma there. But equally, when they do open up, rather than it being a wishing well that you've chucked something in and hope for something back.
Yeah.
When it comes to people's own mental health and well-being and nothing comes back, it's potentially even worse.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's exciting.
Yes.
And what I love with this is that people are wanting to make a difference. People are wanting to make a change when it's needed. And
We're in Mental Health Awareness Month at the moment, aren't we?
Yeah.
This is a very timely conversation.
Absolutely.
And I wonder, maybe we should dive into the topic of burnout, Chris.
Yeah.
I don't know where to start. I had a look before this chat just to think about like the impact of burnout. I've got some stats which I'll share with you.
You have done your homework.
I know, I have, right? These were from the Charity Commission, and they said that 9 out of 10 adults experience high pressure. Have experienced high pressure or stress in the past year, which is a high number. Are you shocked by that number?
It is high.
Yeah,
it's very high.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm jumping in here.
No, you go.
One part I will say about stress is that actually some stress can be positive.
Yes.
When it can focus your mind on a deadline, for example, or you're planning an exciting event, for example. So a bit of stress is a bit of adrenaline, focuses the mind. It's when it's too much and it's continual.
Yeah, and I guess that's what I'm sort of taking away from these stats. That's what they were referring to. 1 out of 5 have taken some time off due to that kind of stress-related mental health challenge.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest kind of, one of the biggest takeaways from this report that I was reading is that work-related mental health issues cost the UK economy £57.4 billion.
It's difficult to imagine, isn't it?
I know, right? I was just like, I had to sit with that for a moment because, you know, that's a huge amount of money, but also that's a lot of people that are experiencing some kind of like mental health challenge. How do you feel about some of those? And like, I'm really interested just to what your kind of like, what do you know about burnout? What's been your experience?
So the feeling to do with the numbers there as well. And I guess when we're talking Shaping Portsmouth here, a lot of people that be listening will be connected to the business world. And The World Health Organization say that having a positive, as in a proactive, mental health and well-being program within organizations gives a return on investment of about 5 to 1.
Okay.
It's difficult to say exactly what it is, but that's a steer that they have. The number that Deloitte have as well is similar to that. So what you can see, because we're used to talking in that sort of language, is that there is a return. We want people to be there. But another term that's often used is presenteeism.
Okay.
Have you heard of this?
No.
So presenteeism, and I'll hold my hands up, I've been guilty of this at times, is when you're there physically, but you're not really there.
Okay, yes.
Your productivity is probably
up. Okay, yeah, you're just showing up. Yeah, okay.
Which can be even worse at times, because if somebody's not there, they might be getting the support that they need, for example.
Well, it's a real kind of physical sign that someone isn't okay if they're not showing up. But if someone is showing up but isn't engaged or doing things like that they should be doing, or there's no joy there, then you don't know, do you? You can't tell if that person's in every day.
Absolutely. And you've used a great word there around joy. And we're probably, I talk about that in a little bit, because joy is often about that, what puts a smile on your face. And those are some of the things that we need to, and I always stress with people to be really honest with what puts their joy on their face, because there's a cliche tick list that they know that they should say.
Yes.
But if they're really honest about it, that's what really helps with mental health, well-being, and trying to avoid some burnout.
Yeah.
So one question that gets asked a lot, what's the difference between burnout and stress?
Okay.
And because the two parts are so intrinsically linked.
Yeah.
So stress is about having too much.
Okay.
Too much pressure, too many projects, too much adrenaline going on, too much energy.
We were talking about tabs being open before we started recording. Too many tabs open in your brain.
Which is a lovely analogy.
Yeah.
Which burnout goes beyond stress. And so it becomes when I've not got enough. I'm not enough. Your enthusiasm. Couldn't give a bleep about this. Energy levels consequently start to deteriorate. Engagement then starts to drop off. And I can recognize, other people might be able to recognize when they might have felt like that.
Yeah.
And the point is that we can have these. It's when it stays with us for a prolonged period of time.
Okay.
But that feeling of being empty and exhausted, because it was, so the International Classification of Disease, it was first in 1974 that they recognised the phenomena in the corporate world of burnout.
Right.
And they brought it down to three distinct elements to it. So it's about feelings of energy depletion, mental distance from one's job, and reduced professional pride or efficacy. So when you break it down, it's fascinating when you think of those three distinct areas. So feelings of energy depletion.
Yeah.
Are you that person on a Monday morning can get up and think, oh, I'm into this today, or are you still feeling that on the Tuesday, Wednesday?
Or the dread on Sunday where you think, I call that feeling Monday because it's where Sunday and Monday collide, and you sometimes you start thinking about Monday before Monday's even arrived.
But that can creep in, that feeling of dread there, the mental distance from one's job. So if you think back to sort of said around presenteeism, so you're sort of there.
But just showing up.
Where's my accountability in this? Oh, I'll get away with this. This is all right.
That might be something for employers to really sit with, because maybe I've worked and managed and coached teams before, and you do sometimes get the person that's always there, but they could maybe be giving a bit more, and you think, oh, maybe is this a productivity issue, or they need training on something, or you need to look at their targets or whatever that is. But actually it's like, oh, okay, could they be burnt out? You know, that's a good question to kind of ask yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. It really is, because some of the things that you might see there is lack of production from people. Are they doing what they need to do? Are they doing it in timely manner? Are they engaging? But a big part with this, with people, is you try and notice a change. So the person that's always engaged, if they withdraw, equally you could go the other way, that somebody that's almost trying to engage slightly more to hide.
Yes, the mask. Yeah.
So it's about a change.
Okay, interesting.
And the other parts that you could see with people is that inability to concentrate, procrastinating with it, not staying on task. I can recognise times when I've not been burnt out, but I've not stayed on task at all.
Yes, okay.
But what is really important is to recognise that it is preventable.
Okay.
And this can sort of come into a couple of facets. It could come into the culture, et cetera, within organisations, but also for individuals. And some of this can be around simple things about setting boundaries.
Okay. boundaries are a big one, because if you haven't, there was this saying that I really like, is that every no to something or someone is a yes to you. And it really helped me reframe boundaries, because sometimes there's that, like, whether it's a people pleasing thing or whether it's a, like, you know, you want to be the person that's really helpful all the time and goes the extra mile. Yeah. But actually, sometimes when you give too many yeses away, you've not said yes to yourself.
I like that, because it's about flipping it around.
Yeah, and I found that really useful. It really helped me. But boundaries I think they're easier to set the more you get used to them.
Yeah.
And maybe, I'm sure there's some people that are really used to saying maybe no more than they say yes. And when I meet those people, like, I'm always like, yeah, you go.
How do you feel about saying no?
I haven't always found it easy. I know that I have, like, real people-pleasing tendencies, which is something that I've been really working on personally. But I understand how important boundaries are. So the more that I've put them in place, like, the easier it's become over time. Definitely. Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah.
Particularly if, like you said, you've got that people-pleasing element to it as well. And you can remember the phrases of, if you want something doing, ask a busy person.
Yeah, I know. I love that phrase. It's so true.
It is so true, because that person probably won't say no. They're people pleasing and they'll plough on through until they can't.
Yeah. And is that kind of when you can sort of switch over from that stress into burnout?
And it's really important to have those, to be able to have those and to feel confident and safe to have those boundaries.
Yeah.
Obviously, the world in which we live in, we can't say no to everything. But if people don't feel comfortable just saying no, think of different ways that it could be phrased of, I won't be able to do that in that time frame unless I drop doing this. Which would you prefer? So that way you're conditioning.
Yes.
You're not saying no.
But it's a negotiation around what works better for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Without you just taking everything on and on and on, because the people pleasing part is fascinating in burnout. Because often people just take on more and more and more, which means that they're then depleted. They've got nothing left to give.
Yeah.
And then ironically, those people that are wanting to help others, they've got nothing to give. Yeah. And so it impacts a whole load of people at the same time.
I always think, because I have experienced burnout in my life, and I guess I always think of it as a bit of like a battery issue. So like my battery like was completely depleted, and then no matter how many times I tried to charge it up, it was like it just wouldn't work. Like if I had a tank, I was trying to fill a tank up and there was a hole in it. So the more I poured into it, the quicker it came out.
Yeah.
And I really noticed that in terms of like boundaries, and a lot of that work that I did around boundaries came from that time where I was burnt out, because I just didn't have like the capacity or the energy to do lots of things. And I remember there was a lot of resting in that chapter, a lot of like not doing a lot really, but in kind of prioritizing that, it kind of got me used to saying no and just like thinking about, you know, how I fixed the hole really in my tank and what were the things that really, really helped me fill it back up.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that.
That's okay.
And you've picked up on one word that I picked up that you used there was around energy. And actually, exercise can be a big part to help us. So that can also, because it's a set period of time, it can help to set some boundaries as well. But it's got to be something you enjoy. I've got so many friends who love going to the gym.
No, not for me, Chris. I wish I was. One day, who knows, but not now.
Yeah, then I could put up one of those smug Instagram pictures. But it's not for me. But it's about finding something that you do enjoy.
Yeah.
Equally, it can be other aspects as well. Just build up those 1% and they quickly add up. So
yes, yeah, so talk to me about the 1%. What does that look like?
So it's a concept that the British cycling team use around the aggregation of marginal gains. Okay. And so it's just about you put a one small change, mm-hmm. it becomes a habit because it's suddenly not a job. It's just okay. doing something a little bit different.
Sure.
So real simple thing. How many people pull up somewhere? You're going to an office, you're going to the shops or wherever, and you see a parking space right out the front. Yes. But actually, if you were to go and look for a parking space 50 metres away,
yeah,
it's not really going to take you that much longer. But it's probably adding on an extra 300 steps for the day.
Okay.
It's a tiny little change.
Yes.
Taking the stairs rather than a lift or an escalator. Confession to everyone, we took the lift up here.
Yes, we did. That's from this point forward, I will be taking the stairs every time.
If people are getting the bus somewhere, for example, get off one stop earlier.
Okay.
But start doing it, just do it one day a week.
Sure.
Then it will go, we're about to hopefully come into that period mm-hmm. of time when the weather's much nicer. Okay, we'll do it twice a week now, we'll do it, etc. So it's those little bits.
Yeah.
Because if you make them big things.
Yeah, if you say, well, I'm going to walk to work every day, rain, wind or shine, then I don't know, you can fail. And then, yeah, it makes it almost harder because you're like, oh, I've tried that. It didn't work. I'm not doing it again.
Yeah. And so it's about, like we spoke about change earlier, make a difference. I mean, you've got this 10,000 steps a day. Mm-hmm. Hey, look, if somebody's doing 15,000 steps a day, we don't want them coming back.
Sure.
But actually, if they want to do a bit more, go 16 or something. But if somebody's, for whatever reasons, is down... say doing 2,000 a day. And hey, if people are working at home for a day mm-hmm. and anyone who looks at the number of steps that they can take, it can be scarily low at times. So incorporate some breaks.
Okay.
For example, even if it is to go out for a 5-minute walk. A lot of the times people are on the phone, do the whole walk and talk with somebody.
Yeah, have a meeting. I was speaking to Hannah Prowse on the podcast.
She's great, isn't she?
Yeah, and she was saying about how she has her walking meetings. And I was like, wow, that is such a great idea. You still get to have the meeting, but you're getting your steps in, you're feeling productive. I really love that. That was a big takeaway. I mean, it wasn't on the recording, but afterwards I was like, right, I'm going to remember that.
Yeah.
That seems like a really wise way to work.
There you go. You've had two people saying it to you now. It's
I know,
sign.
It's got to happen. What I'm thinking, Chris, I'm reflecting on my own time where I was feeling burnout. And I think I was grieving at the time. So there was a lot of emotional burnout, I suppose. Yeah. And the thought of at that point adding in more steps or being more active probably didn't feel like too achievable. So if someone is in that place where they're feeling burnt out and their energy is really depleted and low, like, are there other ways that could help support them, or is movement like a really key part of recovery?
Movement's important mm-hmm. because it helps to set boundaries.
Okay.
If it is saying, oh, I can't do 1,000, don't put a number on it.
Sure.
Take every barrier, know that actually just some people,
trying.
Day one could be like, okay, I'm going to walk to that lamppost out the front door.
Sure. Really small.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Remove anything from it because it's the start of that process.
Okay.
Sleep can be another big thing, and sleep is a fascinating subject because we should be away from screens, etc., an hour before we go to bed.
Yeah, that makes me smile because when I speak to people and they're like, oh, I didn't sleep very well last night. And I'm like, what time did you go to bed? And they're like, whatever the time is, like, what time did you stop looking at your phone? Which is probably like 15 minutes before they went to bed. And it's like, okay, well, maybe that all that blue light might have something to do with it.
Or people have, the other classic that I hear people say so often is they've sat downstairs, put the TV on, whatever it is, dozed off on the sofa.
Yeah.
Walk to bed. As they walk into bed, most of us use our use a phone mm-hmm. as an alarm.
Yeah.
So the inevitability as you walk upstairs with that alarm yes. clock.
Yes.
Oh, there's a notification on there. I read that. And so your mind's gone from having been shut down to I'm going upstairs
no,
to
you're
suddenly
active. Yeah.
you're back in. So trying to, there's a couple of facets. It's about, first off, switching off from that blue light. Mm-hmm. But then there's the part around establishing a routine.
Okay.
And fully understand how it can be difficult at times to establish that routine, particularly if people are having to travel a lot, stay away, get up at different times, yeah. out in the, it can be difficult. Work towards something.
Sure. I love all these takeaways, Chris, because they just feel like really small, gentle steps. Like you don't have to, you know, not perfect is the wrong word, but, you know, there are no kind of rules to this. It's whatever that 1% or that small action, however that shows up in your life or feels good for you, like that's the little path to follow.
Yeah. And do you know what? That's the beauty with humans. Mm. We're all different.
Yeah.
And so we need to make this ourselves. You can give a framework or a concept, but everybody needs to make it for themselves.
Yeah. There's a lot of pressure, isn't there? There's so much talk around well-being, isn't there? And there's yeah. so many different things to try. And lots of, you know, it feels like lots of shoulds, I suppose. And I never feel like shoulding yourself about anything is like a positive thing.
Yeah.
But I really love the thought of this being like really small, actionable kind of like changes.
One of the things for companies that I try and advocate is that on meetings, those back-to-back meetings, you get zero downtime mm-hmm. in it at all. Most providers, so on Outlook, for example, anywhere you can do it, you can set a meeting to finish, rather than it being a half an hour meeting, set it to a 25-minute meeting. I challenge virtually everyone that what you can do in half an hour, you can do in 25 minutes.
Yeah, sure.
That way you're giving people that bit of downtime.
Yeah.
And there's studies that which have been done about the beta waves in the mind. By giving yourself a small break between the meetings, and beta waves are the ones that cause stress.
Yes, okay.
Dramatically reduced throughout the day.
Wow.
And like I say, if it's going to be a 50-minute, if it's going to be an hour meeting, again,
make it 50 minutes, 55 minutes.
It becomes far more focused and objective. Then after that, people have got a chance to, small little bits, go for that 2-minute walk outside. Because,
or even just like to have a break, go to toilet, have a glass of water, like whatever that is, whatever helps you like refuel just slightly before you jump into the next thing.
Yeah. That's, and I, do you know what? I'm going to correct myself now. I'm a terrible sloucher.
Okay.
So I'm not judging you.
No, I'm just saying.
I know what I do. So actually for me, having something like that to just get up out of the chair helps me to come back and reset.
So we've got some really lovely things. The walking meetings, I reckon that's a really good... that's a good idea for people to think. Could you have a little walk and talk meeting, or if you're on the phone? And yeah, 25-minute meetings, 55-minute meetings. I really like the sound of that, Chris. I'm going to take these ideas back to the team at Shaping and we'll give them a trial and let you know.
Perfect. The other bit I'd say to make everybody think when you're talking about burnout, mm-hmm. ask yourself the question, what makes you smile?
Okay. Back to the topic of joy.
Yes. I'm not going to put you on the spot to do that now. And like I said, I urge everybody with it, don't go through a cliched tick box about what you should say, otherwise people are going to judge you or anything like that. Genuinely, what makes you smile? And if you can work that out, that's when you can start to really focus upon that, which can help to bring you, and you can be selfish with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I say be selfish with it because most people think focusing on yourself is selfish.
Mm.
It's not.
It's so important.
It's the fuel that fills your cup back up.
Yeah.
And if you want to be able to give someone something, you've got to have something to give. If you depleted yourself totally, and when you were brilliantly open earlier talking about, and you use a battery analogy, if you can't charge that battery up.
Yeah. Or if you don't know how to charge it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So some of the other simple things people can do, we spoke about saying no, setting those boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Plan your day.
Mm-hmm.
Because by planning your day, it helps to give those boundaries around time. And within that, if you're going to take a break at lunchtime, for example, go for that. Step away from that immediate place of work and go to a change. It might be to connect with some other people. It might be that you've picked up a new hobby and you want to learn a bit more about it. The other parts could be about and employers. It's exactly right and reasonable and an expectation when people are there to be fully present.
Yes.
But why wouldn't you then expect people to be fully present when they're with their family, friends, outside of it? And that's for people to give themselves permission to do that.
Yeah.
Take pride in everything you're doing with work, because that's really important. But be present with your friends and family.
Yeah, that's so true. I think it's so easy to kind of be at home and thinking about all the things like you've got to do or you haven't done, or, you know, it's so easy. Our brains are so brilliant, and I guess they're always trying to work out like solutions and to like prioritize and organize things. But it does take away your presence sometimes when you have a lot going on and you're kind of all your tabs are open and you're trying to work out what the most important ones are. But
And how do you feel about asking for help?
Oh, Chris, you're really talking to my unhealed parts today.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. I haven't historically been great at asking for help. Something that, again, I've like worked on in my adult life. Like I've always had lots of different therapy for different things. I'm much better at it. And I think a stronger person asks for help, honestly. I think it shows a real strength to be able to ask for it. So that's something that I'm kind of like focusing on.
Your self-awareness is fantastic. And again, the honesty, and thank you for sharing.
My therapist.
But the phrase you use there about asking for help being a strength, it really is. Although some people would like to think that they're invincible, not many people really are.
It does get easier for anyone that struggles with it. It does really get easier. And also what I've noticed is people actually really want to help. And if you don't ask for it, you deny someone the opportunity to be able to help you. And like, you know, in this city, in lots of businesses, we pride ourselves on collaboration. And actually, you don't know who can collaborate with you or who has the skills to share if you don't ask the question. So it's really important.
People say no, people won't respond, and you're in the same situation.
Yes.
And I think for leaders as well, there's a big concept around role modelling.
Mm-hmm.
And role modelling can be two aspects. You can either role model it by giving that support.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, a lot of people find it easier to do that because it's, you don't need to know anything about me. Mm. I can just help you. Mm. But actually role modelling those behaviours. So to have a senior person potentially open up, potentially, could anybody help me with this?
Yeah.
They become okay, well, they're prepared to.
Yeah, they're human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that whole role modelling, it can really work two ways.
Well, it gives people permission to ask for help, doesn't it, if you see someone asking. And I love when I meet people, you know, if they're at high level, you know, if they say they don't know something, I just find that so refreshing that someone can be that honest and that vulnerable to be like, actually, I don't have the answer. I feel like you can always, I don't know, in past experiences when I've worked in kind of corporate industries, there's lots of people just saying what they think the answer is without actually knowing. And I find it so refreshing when people are just like, actually, hands up, I don't know, like, let's find out together how. Yeah. And that's such a, like, yeah, such a cool way to be.
And the brilliant part with that is that particularly if it's something to do with their own organization, it shows the trust they have in their team. They go, something like that, but I don't know, so-and-so does. It just shows that level of trust that they got. And trust is a huge fascinating subject as well. Yeah.
Lots of fascinating subjects here, Chris. I feel like we could talk a lot longer about so many different aspects of well-being. And it's so amazing that you're leading the program for our workplace health and well-being, because hopefully our business community can really enjoy the wisdom that you have, and we can help create some really sort of tangible, like, outputs for people. And like I said, these resources and all of this wisdom shared somehow. So I look forward to seeing how that evolves this year. We're wrapping up, Chris. I wondered, is there anything else that you have that you want to share about burnout, about stress, about anything, any wisdom that you have from your own experience that could help people if they think that they are either stressed and they want to avoid burnout, or maybe they're in burnout and they want to know how to get out of it? That's a big question. Sorry.
It is a big question, but it's an important question. And I think what is really important is that organisations invest in their people. Mm-hmm. And that's not just for the people that may be struggling and wrestling with the stigma that still exists around mental health and well-being. It's for people in their organization that those people may open up to. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because there's so many good people in this city doing so many good things, and it's about understanding that and investing in the people. Because if you can do that, you're truly demonstrating that people are the biggest asset for them. The right thing to do, and people will fully respect you for doing that.
Well, you stay in companies that look after you, you attract really great candidates to roles. If you have a really great well-being culture, it's really important. And I think the generations that are kind of coming up, that will be the next generation of workers, they really, well-being is so important to them. They're living very different lives than perhaps I did when I was growing up, but I know that well-being is going to be like fundamental in what they look for when they're looking at businesses and how they kind of recruit and employ people.
And a real other key part, this isn't an HR job. This isn't an HR add-on. It's the it needs to be across the organization. It needs people to be able to go and open up here, and for those people to have the skills to either support or direct to the relevant support.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Chris, and all of your knowledge around this subject. It's been great to talk to you, and thank you for letting me share some of my own personal insights and kind of making me feel safe enough to do that. I always ask one question before we leave around your favourite place in Portsmouth. It could be a view, it could be a restaurant, it could be an activity.
I'm going to...
Where's your joy in the city?
Where's my joy? So I've actually had the privilege, this is my second time, so when I was with
Staff. Oh, Kettle, well, you've had a heads up on that.
No, so I did one before, and I said about, I still have, when I see the hovercraft, six-year-old Chris comes out in that excitement. What's something on a big air cushion doing... bobbing across the water.
Love that.
But what I'm sport mad. I've always been sport mad. So I'll go with two other ones. So most people know I'm massively involved with Portsmouth Force Basketball Club. So
amazing.
When seeing some of the kids team or the junior teams play, or when our men's team are playing at the Ravelin Centre, and just seeing the community come together. I've also been season ticket holder at football, so Fratton Park. I've had some of the highs and lows,
high highs and low lows,
of my life there. And I had the privilege with that Pompey in the community and Spark community doing the sleep out there.
Okay, amazing.
About a month or so ago. So the again, going back to 6-year-old Chris being able to sleep out at Fratton Park.
Yeah, nice.
This is awesome. Yeah,
I love that.
Didn't get much sleep.
No, it didn't sound like the kind of event where sleep was high on the priority, but the...
Yeah, I also had fun at the bar, that didn't help.
Yes, but a great cause. And
yeah, it was brilliant.
I love that. I love your, that Fratton Park is a good highlight in the city for you. We haven't had that one actually for a while.
Oh, really?
So yeah, thank you for sharing that with us. Thank you for your time, Chris.
Thank you.
If anyone is listening to this and they feel like, you know, they're experiencing stress or burnout, like I'm sure if they reach out, Chris, you'd be happy to kind of help or direct or signpost in some way.
Absolutely.
Thank you, everyone. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
This podcast was brought to you by Shaping Portsmouth, working to make Portsmouth the number one UK city in which to invest, live, learn, work and visit. To find out more, please visit shapingportsmouth.co.uk. This podcast was supported by Spark Community Space
and Portsmouth Community Lottery.